The year is 1994. An epic film with an all-star cast of young talent hits, and it's about to leave audiences all over the U.S. in awe. With state-of-the-art animatronics, a score chocked full of memorable tunes, it's the film that made the entire world fall in love with dinosaurs all over again. It's... not that movie, you idiots. You didn't seriously think we'd be talking about something good this month, did you? Buckle up your seatbelt, bitches. It's time to kick off our month of D-list films with Tammy and the T-Rex, The Gore Cut.
Everything is different. It's a different game. Jump into the fire. Jump into my brain.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music they make.
Oh, my.
Why?
My. No, I'm just kidding. We're back with another episode of Terra Incognita. Did I interrupt you, Alex?
No. I had nothing to say.
So the usual, then.
Excuse me?
What? It's a month of D-list nonsense coming your way.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. We found the best of the worst worst movies we could find.
It was hard, too, but I feel like the list was long. There were so many options.
There were just so many more. So we were doing research on this, trying to figure out which four we wanted to cover. Research.
We went to IMDb.
Trying to figure out which four we wanted to cover. And it was one of those things, it started small. Mm-hmm. And it just gradually started getting bigger.
70 movies later.
And bigger. And, the most amazing thing is just kind of how many bad movies I kind of really want to see.
I know,
right? We're going to be doing this month again.
Yes.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to revisit this at some point. But this is about as Mystery Science 3 or 3000 as we're going to get. And I can't imagine it kicking off with a better one than what we've got in store for y'all this week. How's everybody doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah?
Yep. I went to the zoo today.
Yeah, so you went to the Richmond Zoo.
The Mosley Zoo?
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's something that we claim to be ours, but is really an hour away. So how we justify that one is beyond me. At that point, we might as well... Fredericksburg has as much ownership of it as we do.
It was amazing.
So regale people with your zoo adventures. Did you feed the giraffes?
So it was too cold for the giraffes, so
they got those long necks, man. They could catch a sore throat.
So it was inside.
Yeah, could you imagine a giraffe with a sore throat? That would suck.
But we did see the swarm of peacocks that sort of roam around, mm-hmm. which were very interesting. Lions.
I'm surprised those were out. I didn't realize those could tolerate such cold weather.
Everything else was out except for the giraffes. And some of the stuff I thought would be too cold, but apparently they were fine. There's lots of different varieties of monkeys.
Yeah.
Lions, tigers, bears. All in the same area.
Oh my.
What kind of bears?
It was an Asian black bear. Okay. So a smaller bear.
Bears are my favorite.
Yeah.
Did the hippopotamus have stomach problems?
No.
Last time when I went there, the hippopotamus
had stomach problems.
It's
just firing shit everywhere.
Yeah, just rancid shit particles just going left and right. And it would stop for 30-second periods and then continue again.
Keep going.
And I swear to God, it did this for 10 minutes. Because you know how the hippos are kind of... surrounded by a whole bunch of other stuff. So we circled around looking at other stuff and came back. It was still shitting.
What they did have there that I thought was amazing was in their reptile areas, they have an anaconda.
Does it have buns?
Otherwise, I don't want them, from what I hear.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's humongous.
Is it anything like the film that you love so much?
Yes.
Okay.
I can see, obviously some liberties were taken with... with Anaconda.
Were they? I thought that movie barely. Was factually correct.
They're rebooting that, right?
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. but I can see where the inspiration lies, because that was a fat-ass snake.
It was a fat-ass snake.
It was a fat-ass snake. He got some... It did have some buns.
Ooh. Is Jennifer Lopez or John Voight, like, constantly around the cage to make sure that it stays in its place, though?
I hope so. She must have just been off while I was...
No, Jennifer Lopez was just in the Super Bowl. She's off. Like,
no, she's got to come back to her post,
No, she hasn't come back yet. Dude, this is the start of the Anaconda film in real life.
That's why it happened.
She left her post and now it's...
Was there anybody with a horrible fake accent like John Voight, at least?
Oh my God, that's like my favorite part of that whole movie. One of these days we'll do Anaconda. Another creature feature month.
Yeah, one of the... Oh God.
We could just do literally all snakes.
Oh, we could. Snakes on a Plane.
Yep.
Anaconda.
I know there's others.
There's others.
You got me sold. I'm in.
All right.
Whatever.
Snaky September.
Hey. Save that.
In the docket.
We'll see.
Snakes!
Sam, you and I have been having significantly less fun than going to the zoo by busting our ass in the gym.
Yeah.
A lot.
Saturday mornings are lame now.
Yeah. I just don't like... So when we started, it was like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday thing.
Okay.
My wife put the kibosh on that. She was like, no. You're out of the house way too much. I'm too exhausted, especially on a Friday. Let me have
just because I grew it doesn't mean it's not yours.
Yeah, right.
So are you Monday, Wednesday, Saturday?
Yeah,
then?
So we're okay. Monday, Wednesday, Saturday morning. So this is the first week of us doing the Saturday mornings.
Okay.
And so I got up with a kid, as per usual, around like 6:30, 7 o'clock. And the entire time that I'm thinking to myself, I have to be at the gym in 3 hours. I've got to be at the gym in now 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Now I only have an hour until I have to be at the gym. Why the fuck did I agree to this?
I don't know.
But we did it.
We
persevered.
We did.
You're getting swole so you can be in the reboot of Anaconda as John Voight.
Is that what's going on?
No, he wasn't the buffest. Ice Cube was.
Jimmy was, because he's the buffet.
God damn it.
Lord.
God damn it.
You're cut from the cast.
No, you can't. I'm...
The sound technician.
None of us want to take the time to edit this shit.
He's audio.
To be fair, I don't even edit it anymore. Even the last couple of casts, when I've very clearly in the audio said, I'm going to edit this out, I just don't even bother.
Okay. No, I think at this point it's worthwhile to leave it.
Yeah.
We call that behind the scenes footage.
It's true. It's inside baseball here. Nothing but it. So I noticed a little phrase recently floating around on... the interwebs, the horror blogs. Mm.
Shall we speculate about something on the internet?
Yeah, it's what we do. It's what we do here on Terror Incognito. A24 Light. So there's been a whole round of films coming out lately. You know, you've got The Lodge. I think that just came out this weekend, right?
Yep.
You had Gretel und Hansel.
Gretel und Hansel.
And then...
That makes it sound so much better than it actually was. When you say it like that.
And Antlers coming up.
Oh.
And these are all super like atmospheric,
slow burning
movies.
I'd say you could probably throw in anything Spectrevision's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you guys feel about this studio because of three movies that are all pretty
prominent movies.
Yeah. To be fair, they have been the talk of the town.
Yes, they're the belle of the ball.
They are. They are very, very. They're on the pedestal.
Yeah,
for sure. Because of these films all being kind of under the same umbrella, everybody's kind of referring to this style of film as an A24 light.
So I mean, what are the three movies with The Witch, The Witch. Lighthouse, and Hereditary?
I would say so.
Midsummer. You could probably throw that in there too.
Climax. That was an A24. Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was.
Atmospheric.
Brooding. I mean, I get it. I think that's like enough of a focus in like modern horror that there needs to be some sort of thing other than just saying like, oh, it's an atmospheric horror movie. And I feel like A24 is probably best positioned for people to know.
Right. Like, are they the ones that are spearheading that type of
I don't, but movies? They're not.
I don't think they are, but I think that's the studio that most people know when it comes to studio names. Like,
yeah.
Unless you really pay attention, like, you're not going to know if someone says Monkey Paw that it's Jordan Peele.
Yeah, but I guess it's true.
I think you could easily qualify Us and Get Out as within this atmospheric A24 light.
But what about classic films? Like, look back on, like, Rosemary's Baby. Or Old Biddies that we recently checked out.
But I feel like those already fall within
their own category.
Their own categories.
And I think atmospheric, slow-churning films,
but
would
I think,
you...
I think this is specific to,
I think
like
it has
modern.
To be a modern movie.
So everything after this everything, A24 generation of films could
everything
be called
that came after
like,
The Vitch.
Like 2014 and on.
Yeah, I would say, though.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I get it. I don't really...
I don't really care either way.
I want there to be a better name for it, but I get it.
I mean, I love A24. I feel like when they say...
Did they do It Follows? I can't remember if A24 did It Follows.
I don't think they did. And I feel like we should know.
Check
that
out the Babadook also. Did they do...
No.
I'm pretty sure they didn't do the Babadook.
I don't think that they did It Follows either.
But those movies came out around that witch time period.
I would say that those would fall into an A24 light.
Even though they came out around the same time as The Witch?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a...
Just because of where they fell in the timeline,
in the timeline and the type of movies that they're... I think there should be a different name for these types of movies.
So they did not do It Follows. And it does not...
I'm pretty sure they didn't do the Babadook.
No, they did not.
I think that was a British company.
Yeah.
Entertainment One. And Screen Australia / Causeway Films.
Oh, Australia. Right. Australia, British, whatever, same thing. Accents.
I read something the other day that said, I wonder if British people look at Australians and their accents the same way that Americans look at people from Texas.
Oh, maybe.
One of our listeners in particular, just like
Is that Elliot?
I feel like his just anger level at us is just steadily rising. Just like, look, you fuckers.
Oh, you fucker.
Although he's an expat from Britain anyway, so I guess that doesn't really matter. I don't know. Write in
and
share your thoughts about our meanderings about Australia, Elliot.
I've got one meandering about Turkey, where the end of the world is currently taking place.
I would love to hear
this. Tell us about this. So what's this red substance that's emerging from the ground?
So nobody knows.
Satanic blood.
Pig-tanic blood? Is that what you...
Satanic.
Oh, I thought you said pig-tanic, and I was just like, I like that a little more, actually.
It's a band name.
Like, it's just pig squeals into a microphone.
So apparently a couple days ago there was a 6.8 magnitude earthquake in Turkey that has led to speculation of the apocalypse finally coming back into vogue, since nobody's really made mention
of
it since 2012.
Was it not in vogue recently?
Well, because 2012 you had like the whole end of the world
depends on
calendar
who you talk
thing.
To.
Yeah, that's right.
But now people are saying it's coming back. So apparently this earthquake...
Historical civilization predicted that we were going to all die in 2020.
Well, it's not 2020, but it's actually the fact that blood is pouring from the ground.
Dude, what if that's true? What if frogs start raining from the sky?
Apparently, though, this
locust everywhere.
This red blood-like liquid was bleeding up through the ground as the earthquake was splitting everything apart, and it was centered near Sivrice, Turkey.
Where is that? Can you point it out on a map, Sam?
Even if you just said point out Turkey on a map.
I was going to say.
Bad enough
by Asia.
Insert American geography joke here.
I'm bad enough at American geography, let alone world geography. So there was some speculation that it was potentially tied to dye added to the water that helps detect leaks. But that theory has been debunked due to many technicians saying they would have used a brighter color, such as green or yellow. It looks like this. So that's the color of the water that's pouring out of the ground.
Dude, that's blood.
So he's showing us a picture on his phone, and it legit looks dark and syrupy like blood.
Can you text me that link so I can put it in the podcast description so people can check it out as well?
I sure will. But others are
speculating. I feel like my description was pretty good.
Others are speculating, and this is where the end of the world bit comes in, more supernatural explanation, saying that the 16th chapter in the book of Revelations counts down the stages to the apocalypse.
It's always Revelation.
Saying, the third angel poured out his bowl on the rivers and springs
his
of water.
Balls on the rivers.
And they became blood. So yeah.
And they became like blood.
Mm. Wow, really?
Yeah.
Okay, bro.
Palmer's read Revelations.
I used to be an altar boy, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, I got
show
on my
me
knees.
Where the bad man touched you.
I was gonna say, how's your butt?
So yeah, end of the world. It's taking place
Chabla
overseas.
Chabla station's funny.
You're allowed to make those jokes now. You got kids, or can you?
Oh, is that worse?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll find out if you know,
Child Protective Services comes tonight.
CPS just knocks on the door. So we heard a podcast that you have.
Never mind.
That is. Did you know the child molestation is funny? It's not. We don't condone it on this cast. We also had somebody write in and chew me out.
Listen to our other one.
We also had somebody write in and chew me out about old Gibby, so I want to make it clear. I do not support his actions. I just like his fucking movies.
Palmer is separating the art from the artist.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to leave it.
Somebody really wrote in this scream.
Yeah. Dude was like,
thank you.
Don't influence him.
I appreciate you. I try and tell him he doesn't fucking listen to me.
Jesus Christ.
Separate the art from the artist, folks.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Unless they're child molesters.
I mean, David Bowie.
In which case, apparently, they're funny to have.
It's a black comedy, Palmer. Sam.
You're right.
I was actually talking to somebody at work about that movie the other day.
What? Child? Sorry, fucking Serbian film?
Serbian film. This new person that works with me is like really into horror movies and stuff. And so
you're
like,
telling him about a Serbian film?
Well, no, she was asking about it.
Oh.
And she was asking for other recommendations.
Has she seen it?
Based on a Serbian film?
Yeah, and I was like, check out Salo. So she went home and watched that. And she's
my God.
So she's like, well, that movie was actually pretty good. I was like,
so she's a child molester.
I was like, so we should really talk about these outside of the office.
Yeah. Probably. Every time like somebody at work is like, oh, I listen to your podcast. I fucking
please
just,
God,
I,
what episode?
A little piece of me
dies.
Thinks I'm going to be fired tomorrow. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened yet.
One of my really good friends from work was like, oh, I was talking to someone else that works with us that is into horror movies. I told him about your podcast. I was like, no, God, don't. Yeah. Don't do it.
I don't mind as long as that person doesn't have the wherewithal to be able to fire me.
I think that everyone else I work with sucks besides like 5 people. So.
If you listen to this podcast, you're not one of those. Are one of those 5 people.
Yeah, you're one of those 5 people, for sure.
All right. You guys ready to jump into this week's horror headlines?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Headlines. Shit.
All right. That's permanently etched on the podcast recording from here on out.
Anybody, any of our listeners want a free cat to a good home?
I think your wife might have something to say about that one. We're going to start off this week's horror headlines with something we haven't done in a little while. Mm. The horror box office. Mm. Speaking of Gretel und Hansel.
And A24 Light.
this movie isn't doing so well at the box office. It brought on only $6.05 million during its opening weekend. It's a pretty slow start to things as of right now. But there's a silver lining for the Orion feature. It only costs about $5 million to make. So it should recuperate all that money regardless. It doesn't really fare well for that dark fairy tale universe that Oz Perkins, the director, was talking about doing as a result of this.
Which is sad because I like that idea.
I do like that idea too, but
I feel like we also just haven't gone to see the movie, so are we helping? No.
Rip.
But I also feel like the whole dark fairy tale thing is one of those things that would just work better on a streaming service at this point.
Yeah, you know, I would love to see Shudder do like a series of dark fairy tale stuff. Hey, Shudder, don't take that idea. I will fucking sue you if you try. Contact me directly and we will discuss this.
Yes, because there's not a plethora of stories they can steal.
It's my idea.
It's
trademarked.
Your idea. You're the only one who's ever thought of this, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Turning isn't doing so well either. The recently released film was butchered critically and received a cinema score of F. Mm. The second this month, mind you, leading it to earn only $3 million this past weekend, putting it around $11 million in total for its duration in theaters.
So does this mean other people think the same way about Finn Wolfhard as you do?
God, I hope so.
That can't be the reason.
No, it's actually just supposed to be a generally bad movie.
Just a shit movie.
Yeah. The film cost about $14 million to make, so it doesn't look like it will recoup at all. Literally no idea why they keep trying to turn this short story. It's based on Henry James's The Turn of the Screw into a film. This is the 5th fucking time that this movie has been done, and the 5th time that it has failed. Not just a little bit, but by a large margin.
Because this time I'm going to do it right.
Yeah, I guess.
Hey,
I don't
Sam,
know.
Did you read any more Henry James since we talked about him last time?
I have not.
Okay, me neither. It's when you were gone, Palmer, and Sam and I both decided that we were going to be more read.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we both decided.
Because I have a collection of short stories, like all horror short stories, with a couple of his in there. And I started reading it. I got through like four or five of them. They're hit or miss.
So my mom texted me and was like, I have a bunch of Henry James. I said, you listen to my podcast? Yeah. And yes, I'll borrow your books.
I bet she doesn't think child molestation is funny.
No, she does not.
Do you think she's going to make it to this point in this episode?
She probably turned it off.
Or she can hear you ask to borrow the books.
She does. I don't know.
Regardless,
I pretend like not to think
about
it.
We just need to time it right, so it's like every time you hit skip ahead and it's like the 45-second jump, we just mentioned child molestation. She's like, when will this end?
It's a whole podcast, Mom.
It makes me glad my parents are dead, so they aren't disappointed in me.
That's dark. I love it.
Anyways, the message to take away from here is that nobody should make another version of The Turning.
I'm going to try, you guys, and it's going to be better.
Taryn Bonito presents
The Turning. Just going to film it on my iPhone.
Yeah.
Hey, I love
do it. Hey, yeah,
absolutely.
You can. It's good stuff.
It's going to be A24 lightish.
Actually, it wasn't like
I'm
one
just
going to
do a black and white, creaky ass sounding video of me literally turning a screw. For an hour and a half.
I'd probably praise it uncontrollably. Just put Willem Dafoe ranting in the background. I'm sold, dude.
Palmer's favorite movie of 2020.
Speaking of F cinema scores, The Grudge has managed to make its money back. And then some. The budget was around $10 million. It's sitting around $40 million now. So it's good for Nicholas Pesh. But I can't help but wonder how much Sam Raimi's name might have help draw that crowd.
I was going to say, I feel like if anyone's going to go see... The trailer was good, though.
It was. The second trailer was good. The first one, remember, watched it, and we were just like, this looks awful. And then the second one came out.
I haven't heard
a
single good thing about this movie.
Well, about The Grudge? No. But the weird part is,
it's
like...
It's somehow making $40 million.
Well, that's because of the name, I think. Just The Grudge. Okay. People will go see it. Weebs everywhere love their Japan. They're just like, yes, Grudge.
So it has The Grudge name. And then it has that really dope trailer. And then it also has Andrea Riseborough, which I think people really like a lot.
Yeah.
So it has things for it that seem like it's going to be good. And then apparently it just is shitty.
Yeah. People like John Cho, too. So
people do love John Cho.
I guess that's got something to do with it. You know, I don't know. It's also one of those things, like, I've really liked most of what Nicholas Pesh has done, except for Pretty Little Thing in the House. I really didn't like that movie.
It was fine. I feel like it was kind of slow, but I didn't hate it.
Yeah. Well, I really didn't like it, but...
I didn't love it.
I expected this to be better.
Yeah. Oh, than that? Yes.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening. I'm still going to probably check it out when it comes to, like, Netflix or Shudder or whatever the fuck.
Well, I forgot he did piercing.
I may
do it.
Yeah,
he did piercing.
I may rent it for $3.99 on Amazon.
For $3.99?
Yeah. That's, like, my bait. Like, that's my limit.
It's $3.99. Yeah. That's where he sits. next up, we've got new news on Netflix's upcoming Resident Evil series. Looks like Redanian Intelligence, I think I pronounced that right. It's a site that helped leak info about the recent Witcher series on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us some fun bits about Resident Evil. And apparently it's set to begin production this summer.
I was going to say, and what did they say?
According to the production entry for the Resident Evil series, aside from the production beginning in June, the show is set to be 8 episodes, each being 60 minutes in length. Prior to the June start date, the series on-location prep work will be in April, with the main hub of the production being in South Africa. Take it all in passing for now, but considering the site's history with uncovering Witcher details, it might be good to listen in. Next up, Quiet Place Part 2. Got a TV spot during the Super Bowl.
You're in the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl.
The ad offered a bit of new footage about the postal, or I guess the how things led into being the post-apocalyptic world that we know now. We also got a glimpse of Krasinski.
Yep.
Being in the film again, obviously in the past.
Which is, yep.
No, he just had somebody else's brain transplanted in him.
An animatronic.
10 out of 10.
Hot man.
The studio also pumped out a featurette about the behind the scenes of Krasinski's sequel. Featured Emily Blunt and Millicent Simmons and Noah Jupe reprising their roles from the 2018 film and discussing the direction of Part 2. The sequel is set to pick up right after the events of A Quiet Place with Evelyn Abbott and her children and her newborn. As they face the terrors of the outside world and continue to fight for survival.
So being a parent now, where I was not a parent when that movie first came out,
yeah,
with screaming ass babies, there is no way.
No.
There is no way.
No. No. I feel like they're trying to, but like they're kind of hinting at like the human element, blah, blah, blah. Like I feel like this, yes, is kind of going in the same direction
Walking
that like
Dead.
The Walking,
yes,
Dead already,
uh-huh,
was.
That makes me so fucking nervous about this because I was watching it and the only thing I could think of was Terminus.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, come on. The Walking Dead has gone nowhere for the last 5 years.
That's okay, true. But it's getting 10 more years, Sam.
But you have to say that when The Walking Dead first did that, it makes sense,
good,
though.
Yeah.
Because that is what this, what I would imagine the scary part of any sort of apocalypse would be.
Is other people, for sure.
It's other
100%.
People. It's the same thing with like an outbreak. Like, you're not worried about the virus. You're worried about the people. Because people are more crazy than brainless zombies.
Yes.
But, although the things in the
but it sounds
place,
like it just,
yeah, they're not zombies. They're fast,
yeah,
moving, fucking beasts.
It sounds like it happens almost instantly, where it's just like people revert to like not even like a tribal survivalism, but like an individualist kind of method, where it's like, yeah, they're just as bad as the fucking monsters, if
right,
not worse.
Yeah. Do you not think that's how it would happen, though?
I don't think so.
You think people are inherently.
I think we'd be on a larger scale.
Yeah.
We've had this discussion before.
I know, sorry,
podcast,
yeah.
So.
I could just talk about this for days, but I'll...
also, supposedly they're going to answer how all this started, and if they come out and say this started in some Chinese lab, 1010 would stand again.
100 points.
It started with the coronavirus.
Is there something higher than an A+ for a cinema score?
Because that's what it gets.
We'll be keeping our eyes on this one as it approaches its March 20th release date. And then finally, I'm throwing one last spoke, or sticking the spokes here. We got a brand spanking new trailer for Chris Rock's new Saw film.
Oh, that's right.
What the fuck kind of mind fuck does this movie look like it's going to be?
Palmer sent me the trailer and I asked him if it was Bad Boys. Just to piss him off.
I didn't see this.
Oh, you didn't watch it?
I linked it, dude, in the chat.
He missed it. He was not active in the chat
point.
Oh, this was the thing you sent me when I was in that fucking all hands meeting at work, wasn't it?
And
I
said, yeah, exactly, later. Yeah.
When we pause for the next segment, you got to watch this thing, dude.
So is it as absurdist as I imagine it's going,
yes,
to be?
It's Samuel L. Jackson is amazing.
Does it look good?
And also, can we talk about how it's from the book of Jigsaw?
Yeah, I don't
the
understand
fuck
what
does
the
that
fuck
even mean.
Just,
welcome to the new 10 years of Jigsaw.
Yeah. The only thing I can think of is like, you know, they're really kind of latching on to the whole like followers,
okay,
aspect,
yeah,
of it. And so, maybe he's got a cult now.
Maybe.
But the whole premise is that somebody is back doing Jigsaw-like traps, but targeting cops this time.
They're targeting cops!
Yes! I didn't realize you were acting in this film, Alex.
Yes, here I am. This is my breakout movie.
And so it looks like part like cop drama, part Seven,
mm-hmm,
and then part,
mm-hmm,
Saw film.
Part Saw film. Honestly, I got very much less of Saw film.
More Seven and
cop
film,
drama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I got too.
Do you think they're trying to?
They're trying to front end that though. Now I feel like the horror elements will still be there.
Oh, absolutely. But do you think they're trying to draw people in who don't know?
Oh,
about, 100%. Like, I feel like my mom would go watch that movie.
Yeah,
and like, wouldn't realize like what she's watching.
Yeah, Book of Jigsaw. Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Have you heard of? Because it's not even Book of Saw.
Yeah.
Like it's Book of Jig. Like,
yeah.
Well, this is a Spiral Book of Saw.
Yeah.
Oh, is it Book of Saw?
Saw?
Okay.
It's Book of Saw.
Spiral Book of Saw. Yeah, but like. Do you immediately
old
think
not
that
know
like,
what that is? Okay, boomers.
Yeah. Do you immediately think like somebody who's not familiar with the franchise is gonna assume that that's like a
like
related
a
to Saw the movie?
No. I'm just happy to see Chris Rock
I
back
barely
in the movies.
He's like he doesn't look like he's aged.
No.
Both him and Sam Jackson just don't look like they've aged.
Well, Samuel Jackson's got all that fucking Marvel money now. Yeah. He's never going to age.
Chris Rock. Oh, so he's the next Magic Johnson?
His
is that what you're saying?
His skin looks tight. Yes. Like, tight, tight.
Now
like,
all he needs is AIDS.
Time stamp for Alex's birthday.
Wow.
Do we need to take you back to the zoo?
Yeah.
Oh, they did have some warthogs there that I really
identified with.
Yeah, they were just so mad to be outside.
What were you trying to say before I rudely made AIDS jokes?
I don't have any idea. I went into a fugue state really quickly.
Apparently.
And popped back out.
Apparently. All right. Well,
Chris Rock looks the same now that he did when he played.
Yeah, I just think his skin is like tight. Like it looks like he hasn't aged at all.
Like a tiger.
And then AIDS.
Oh, yeah. All right. I think we're done with this segment.
Oh, my God. This has been the most offensive first 35 minutes of our podcast, I feel like, ever.
Saturdays are different when we're not
Saturdays
doing this after a whole day of work.
Uh-huh. And we don't have to do anything tomorrow? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay.
All right, Sam.
Yep.
We got now slang?
Yes.
let's fuck it.
All right, so two movies this week. One we briefly mentioned previously. Yep. This one I've been following forever. Sundance Darling from last year, picked up by Neon, and is finally getting released after being pushed back from last November. The Lodge, getting a limited release in theaters on the 7th. A soon-to-be stepmom is snowed in with her fiancé's two children at a remote holiday village just as relations finally begin to thaw between the trio. Strange right. and frightening events threaten to summon psychological demons from her strict religious childhood.
Mm. This looks very good.
It seems like they might be also literal demons.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, this movie does look great. I've been kind of battling internally with getting an AMC pass.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to figure out whether or not I can actually go see a movie at least once a week.
Because there's only one AMC theater here in town, right?
Which one is
there's
that?
One right by my house.
Okay.
It's that like dine-in one.
Well,
is
Bowtie part of AMC?
Mm-mm.
It's its own thing. Yeah. Okay, so the AMC by you, I think, is the only one in town.
Yeah.
All of the rest of them are Regal.
Regal.
Yeah. But yeah, that one by that would like, if I could like for sure get away on like a Sunday every day.
Good luck with
I
that.
I just have too much other shit going on.
You know.
I feel like I would have to be like, all right.
Children.
I won't go to the gym on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Let me go see a movie on Sunday.
Yeah, because you can't have gym 3 days a week, then plus podcast one, and then plus.
Yeah, but
movie.
I gotta maintain. I gotta get swole.
You gotta get swole.
So that when Palmer really breaks it big, he can end up in Saw 37.
Exactly. Yeah, buddy.
I'm very excited for this movie because I like movies that take place in winter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a very good setting for me.
I wish.
I can relate to that as a Quebecer.
I wish. There was, like, Amazon would release a thing that was like, hey, pay, like, an extra, like, $20 mm-hmm. on top of what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
and you can just watch whatever new releases you want.
Yes, that's a good idea also.
Come on, Amazon.
Well, especially now that a lot of the
make my Amazon Prime fee a year, an even $150.
Well, especially with, like, a lot of these like, genre releases doing limited and VOD on the same
VOD.
Day.
Mm-hmm.
Or like limited and VOD 3 days later.
Yeah, I can't get out to go watch movies, but I would pay a monthly fee to watch them.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
It is a whole fucking thing. And I like it, but I just can't get out as much as I used to.
Yeah.
Or just
so fucking expensive now.
You know what? I would even be willing to pay like for certain movies. Not all of them. But mm-hmm. if they offered it, I'd probably be likely to pay it. Just release the movie out on VOD the same time it comes out in theaters. And I'll pay the movie theater price to watch it at home.
Oh, yeah. Like, how much is it now? Like,
that's like
$12?
Rent them on, like, if you rent them on your cable, it's like
$20.
Yeah, $20. It's more expensive.
But it doesn't come out right away, though, does it?
Yeah, it's like after, it's before VOD,
it's like pre-VOD.
Before VOD, but after cinema release.
Yeah.
I mean, I like, don't get me wrong, I enjoy going to the movies.
But we had kids, man.
And it's also just, you're
right.
It's
hard to get out.
It's hard to get out and like, it's, you gotta leave your house, take off your bra.
You mean put your bra on?
Your bra on.
No, Alex only wears a bra at home.
And then you gotta buy snacks. And
she just wants to turn heads wherever she goes. It's like that episode of Seinfeld where that girl just doesn't wear a bra, and then Elaine gives her the bra, so she wears the bra as a shirt.
Yep. Alex is officially an episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised that's my first.
Speaking of VOD, this other movie this week comes out on VOD on the 7th from Saban Films, starring Elijah Wood, but strangely not produced by Spectrevision. Yeah. Come to Daddy.
This looks so good.
I am probably gonna watch this tonight.
The feature film, the feature film directorial debut of Ant Timpson, who's the producer for ABC's of Death. Norval Greenwood, a privileged man child, arrives at the beautiful and remote coastal cabin of his estranged father, where he quickly discovers that not only is Dad a jerk, but also has a shady past that's rushing to catch up with both of them. Now hundreds of miles from his cushy comfort zone, Norval must battle with demons, both real and perceived, in order to reconnect with a father he barely knows.
Mm-hmm. Damn, Dad, why you suck?
So many demons this week.
You guys, this looks so good.
Demons and demons
and
demons.
And you can rent it for $6.99, which is amazing.
Oh,
yeah, $7, not bad.
That's a little bit. It's a little bit higher than my limit that I just said
where?
I have.
But Amazon. I'll do it.
Amazon, okay.
But I'll do it. That's what she says.
But I'll do it for an extra $3.
For you, Elijah, anything.
I love Elijah Wood.
All right, that's it.
That's it. That's all we got this week.
All right, it's time for our main event.
Mm-hmm.
With the dinosaurs.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
All right, so this week we're talking about Tanny and the T-Rex.
Jesus.
Directed by Stuart Raffel, written by Gary Bruckett and Stuart Raffel. Before we get to the cast, I want to talk about this director a little bit.
Okay.
So this guy is responsible for the following movies in a 10-year window.
Yeah. I love that we both wrote pretty much the same intro to this fucking movie. Go ahead.
The Ice Pirates with a $9 million budget.
Which one, sorry?
The Ice Pirates.
Ice Pirates, okay.
The Philadelphia Experiment with a $21 million budget. Mac and Me with a $13 million budget, which was provided mostly by McDonald's and was more or less a retread of an E.T. script. Mannequin 2 on the Move with a $13 million budget, where the original had a $6 million budget and he had never seen it.
Yep.
And then this fucking movie with an undisclosed budget that I can only imagine being somewhere between $1 million and all of the monies. He also owns a lion named Major. He was previously an animal trainer before getting into directing, and he probably trained the T-Rex in this movie. There are, and here's a list of some of the stars that he's worked with in his movies. Michael Douglas, Jodie Foster, James Brolin, Rod Steiger, Angelica Houston, James Coburn, Billy Zane, Jane Seymour, and of course, Denise Richards and Paul Walker. This is the same guy that wrote the Wesley Snipes film Passenger 57, which was number one at the box office and has one of my all-time favorite lines that I use anytime I go anywhere near a casino. Always bet on black.
He's literally responsible for Wesley Snipes.
Yes.
Like being a fucking celebrity.
Absolutely. And he is remarkably candid when talking about his work, and we'll get into a bit more of that later on.
He's also responsible for his tax evasion.
Yes.
Well,
he talks a little bit about tax evasion when talking about this movie, too.
Yeah.
So the cast includes Denise Richards in her first starring film role playing Tanny.
She was in an episode of Seinfeld called The Shoes.
She was.
1 year before.
Oh, well, there you go.
Where she bent over and showed her cleavage to George.
Okay.
And
hilarity, hilarity ensued.
It lost them the NBC show.
Theo Forsett as Tammy's gay friend Byron Black. Paul Walker in his first starring film role as Michael. Ellen Dubin as Helga. Terry Kaiser as Dr. Gunther Wackenstein. Buck Flower as Norval, Ken Carpenter as Neville, George Pilgrim as Billy, who apparently is as big of an asshole in real life as he was in this movie.
I can see that.
Oh, yeah. Let's pause and talk about George Pilgrim for a second.
Okay.
You guys need to go pull his IMDb up right now.
All
right. And just look at his pictures and read the tags that he has in all of these pictures.
Okay.
Because he is definitely the one that uploaded all of the photos on his IMDb.
I don't even know where you find the photos.
If you just click on the, like, pictures of him.
And then you can, like, cycle through them, yeah.
Yeah, you can cycle. Just read the tags. He's got his own website tagged. And then conspiracy nonsense because he's like leeching on to somebody who's going through an abusive lawsuit in order to maintain his celebrity status.
Oh my.
Do you see this? It's like in every fucking photo. This guy is a scumbag.
Okay.
Like an actual fucking scumbag. The entire interview process, by the way, for the DVD, when he's talking about like... he probably told the interviewer that he's strong like 15 times.
Does he kind of look like David Duchovny a little bit?
Yeah. Well, he starts alongside David Duchovny in the Red Shoe Diaries.
And now he wants to be David Duchovny.
Yeah, now he wants to be David Duchovny. Why won't you love me, David Duchovny?
So are you talking about why Summer Redstone kicked Sydney Holland out?
Yeah, that woman that he's with in the first couple of photos is Sydney Holland, and he's like kissing her in one photo. Yeah. So I think he's like leeching off of her like feud or divorce or whatever.
There's
in order
some
to
weird
like
sort of infographic with an old man
soul
in the middle.
Searching. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Go to my website, georgepilgrim.com.
30% of Viacom stock declined in 2051. Thanks to malaise in media stocks and weak ratings. Yeah. What the fuck is this even talking about?
I don't know, dude. He's fucking batshit.
Love it.
I love it.
It also includes Sean Whalen as Weasel, J.J. Saunders as Byron's father, Sheriff Black, which is racist, John Edmondson as Carl, John Franklin as Michael's uncle, Drunk Bobby, and Efren Ramirez as the Pizza Boy.
The Pizza Boy.
My Bill synopsis Efren of this movie Ramirez. To anyone who hasn't seen it. Unknown Paul Walker gets to take a dinosaur out for a spin in order to make his driving ability known to Vin Diesel. Meanwhile, unknown Denise Richards falls in love with a robot because Stuart Raffel finally watched the original Mannequin and decided to make a proper sequel.
Oh my god, I think that's one of my favorites that you've done.
Little did you know that after this film, she needed to sign up to become a citizen.
She's going to Starfleet, baby.
Oh my gosh.
But she's going the officer route.
Yes.
She can't be,
she's not
going to
be a plebe.
No, she's not, yeah.
Sci-fi. Yeah.
You want to take the actual synopsis over?
Taking the reins from here on out?
Yeah, have at it, buddy.
All right, so the budget was revealed by the director in an interview on the Blu-ray special features. $1.3 million.
So you're right. Somewhere between $1 million and all the monies.
Yes, yes. So he got $1 million from basically the guy that owned the T-Rex.
Yep.
And then $300,000 was raised in additional funding over the course of 2.5 weeks, which is absolutely crazy that this guy directed Mac and Me and then was like, hey, I need $300,000, and he got it in 2 weeks.
Gimme, I got a good idea.
I don't know.
Fake E.T.? I did it.
Yeah, right?
I'm sorry. I'm just looking at this guy's IMDb, and I will move on as soon as we're done. Yeah. But there's just also
George Pilgrim's
picture of a fireplace.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's in his Sedona home.
He's just a fucking...
With his picture on the mantle.
Yeah.
Citizen Pilgrim.
All right, I'm done.
It's a thing. So in a period of, like I said, 2 weeks, Stewart managed to write a script for this movie, secured additional financing, scouted acting talent, scouted locations, and planned out his entire budget. Which explains why this movie was so bad.
You mean why this movie was so good.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's pretty ambitious for any filmmaker to accomplish. But like I said, given the limited time frame, I think you can kind of piece together exactly why this film just turned out as awful as it did. Initial writings of the script were straight sci-fi horror, but Raffel knew that this movie wouldn't fly with a more serious audience, so he began to add humor to it, claiming that comedy audiences are more forgiving. And if you think about it, he's not wrong. I mean, White Girls, mm-hmm. Scary Movie 3, Valentine's Day.
Love it. So good.
They're all genuinely awful movies. Like, actually awful movies, but they have huge cult followings. And I hear them talked about repeatedly in conversation. Tons of people have seen them. I feel like they get a lot more exposure than a lot of the cult horror movies that attract similar audiences that we discuss regularly on this podcast. So, Once they settled into a more humorous tone, Stewart began to phone up his past colleagues and rounded up a number of people that he had worked with previously on his other films, explaining that this was a small budget, but promised it would be a lot of fun. Surprisingly to him, a lot of people agreed once his former director of photography, Roger Olkowski, came on board. The film opens with a gratuitous, overtly sexualized dance shot of Tammy, a young high school teacher, or cheerleader, not teacher, cheerleader.
All right, put your fantasies in check real quick.
You're right. I'm going to put them in check for a second here.
We watched that opening scene 3 times, right?
We did, yes. Not on accident.
I feel like we were made to think it was by accident.
Yeah. Well, the first time we rewatched it was to make sure that they spelled Tammy wrong, which they did. And then the third time we rewatched it was just because.
Yeah.
That's fair.
You just got to do so. What you got to do, man? I don't understand what the issue is. Watching from the bleachers is his 12-year-old Paul Walker, I mean Michael, with a huge shit-eating grin on his face. He just wrapped up with football practice and is sore but eager to spend time with Tammy. As they leave the school, the two of them meet Byron, Tammy's gay friend, who gives Michael the approving eye before jetting off into the school.
How have they been at the same school and never met each other?
He's the only black kid there.
But he says he knows him. Like, later on in the conversation, like, when he's talking with Tammy. Yeah,
I think he means, like, he knows him because, like, he's a hottie, and, like, everybody knows him.
Yeah. I don't know. This whole script makes no sense.
Like,
once again, you're scrutinizing it, and it's a comedy. Imagine if it was a serious sci-fi horror film, and we tried to scrutinize it at that point. He's right. He's right. As the two begin talking about a yellow carnation that Michael gave to Tammy, Tammy says, "Oh, you shouldn't have done this." And we've got a clip.
So
what?
You shouldn't have done this. I can't accept it.
Why not?
Because you know exactly why not.
Tammy, you can't live the rest of your life being scared of somebody.
It's not worth it. Don't you understand that if he hurt you, I would never be able to forgive myself?
But I'm not scared of him.
I know you're not, but you should be. I just can't do it.
I'm not afraid of him. He's not a tree. He can't kill me.
Oh, ouch. My God.
I like it.
I can't.
I like it a lot. I'm a fan of what just took place right then and there. I think we can just call that one a wrap and move on. Alex is just mean mugging the both of us.
He went to my high school. It's kind of like we were friends.
Is that how that works?
But we weren't.
It's an awkward intro, to say the least, for these two characters, but it does a good job exploring the connection between the two of them and introducing the film's bigger problems, Tammy's ex-boyfriend, Billy.
Who's a legit psychopath.
Yeah, dude, this guy, God, I just don't understand.
I don't even understand how everyone is just so easy breezy about him.
That's just Billy.
Oh, that's just Billy. I'm like, he's fucking crazy.
Yeah, dude, like, he definitely has, like, some sort of disorder. Like, this is the type of guy that grew up, like, microwaving cats.
Oh, absolutely. And everyone's just like, that's just Billy.
Yeah.
He's no good for you. You're like, no, he's fucking insane.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of Billy, he suddenly arrives with his massive posse and begins to harass Michael before erupting into a giant fight. Actor George Pilgrim, who played Billy, had a lot to say about this fight in an interview. He actually had a bit too much to say in general. And came across, like I said, as a massive douche.
Also, our job on this podcast is to make him as offended as possible. Yeah, because Sam is under the impression that he seems like the type of person who would listen.
No, I think I don't think he would listen. I think he would just, like, he's accidentally the kind of person.
Shall
that
we
would,
hashtag like, him gratuitously?
Yes.
In the description.
He's the kind of person that would accidentally come across our podcast because of, like,
his
one
name
friend.
Was in it.
And his name happened to pop up in it. And I swear to God, if we put it on social media with his name, he's going to find out.
Hey,
about
I hope you fucking choke on a popcorn kernel.
We don't wish death. We just want you
I just said choke. I didn't say die.
Okay. I'm just making it clear.
Specification.
Just making it clear. You know, it's not. It's
I
not...
hope your fireplace catches on fire.
You the one in your photo on your IMDb. Yeah. he basically he broke down some of the behind the scenes nonsense that took place during the fight shoot. They actually took over a high school on a school day.
Mm-hmm.
He said that when he arrived, he remembers stepping on the set and thinking that the extras were actually kids that went to the high school.
Okay.
And he was very confused. So he talked to somebody that he thought was a high school security guard that turned out to be one of the stagehands of the film and directed him to the rest of the cast. So this is where it gets...
dumb also?
Yes. So this is where it gets interesting because both he and... what's his name? From People Under the Stairs. Sean Whalen. Both of them specifically mentioned the fact that there was only one trailer.
For everybody. Oh, no.
In
which is, like, just mentioning Sean Whalen, like, it's so strange. They have one trailer for all these people, and all these people have gone on to do, like, pretty successful movies, except for Billy, of course.
Sean Whalen was doing successful shit before he started this movie.
So was Terry Kaiser. I mean, he was Bernie in Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah.
John Franklin was
arguably the most famous person.
Probably.
And John Franklin, the kid scientist.
Yes.
He was in Children of the Corn. He was in the Addams Family as Cousin It.
He was in Children of the Corn.
Yeah, he was in Children, yeah.
Some actually, like, well-known people.
Yeah, there's, I mean, all of these people have been all over the place. They have been in much more successful stuff except for George.
Yeah.
This is George's highlight right here.
Yes, it is. No, his conspiracies are his highlight.
Yeah.
He was in Red Shoe Diaries.
He was. But that would you consider that more successful than this?
More people have seen it.
Yeah, that's probably true, actually. All right. That might have been his
claim. But is it a better movie?
Mm,
no.
No. It's a show, first off.
Is it a better show than this is a movie?
What year are we in?
Now.
When it came out? Maybe.
There wasn't a lot of options, Sam.
No, there wasn't. It was
before the golden age of internet
that was about
pornography.
Yeah, about the best you had when it came to softcore pornography. So he approached one of the stagehands. They directed him, turned to the one trailer on set. Before filming this scene, Paul comes into the trailer. This is the first time that they had ever met each other. And according to George, Paul said, and I quote, "Dude, we got a rap on this." They rewrote the fight scene. They're calling it a testicular standoff.
That's one of the special features.
It is. The two thought long and hard about how they were going to do this scene and if they wanted to do it at all. But then the stunt coordinator, Fernando Celis, came barging into the trailer, as he quoted. And he specifically said, "This is the way it's going to play out. Guys,
you're going to grab each other's junk. He's going to grab your dick. And you're just going to hold on."
Yeah, pretty much. Hold on to it, but fear not. You're going to reach over here. Paul, you're going to reach over here. And you know when you go to the dog park and bend over to pick up dog poop? Do that to his pants. And then apparently he pulled out two cups, huge cups. The exact way George put it in the interview was LeBron James extra large cups.
Oh. I don't get the shit picking up reference.
I get because I guess they're both like hunching over
opening
their hands wide or something. I don't know.
That makes sense.
They both agreed that the cups were far too large to fit the tight jeans and skin tight football pants they were expected to wear for the scene. So they threw them in the trash. In short, they were actually clenching each other's junk.
It was a testicular standoff.
We are nothing if not character actors.
The police arrive to break up the fight and take Billy into custody, but Tammy is unable to deal with the events. She breaks down and runs away in tears. So
she's a hot mess.
One of the interesting things
is... both of her penises just got mangled.
I don't know whose penises I love more. One of the officers that pulled George off... like, this is a real thing.
Okay.
That pulled George off actually had a heart attack on set. Oh. George was fighting back so hard that the older man was working to pull was working too hard to pull him back. George said he couldn't remember if it was Buck or the other guy, but I think it was Buck
because if you
watch it, Buck is panting really hard. Uh-huh. He's really red and he's super sweaty. Really sweaty.
Yeah. I thought he was just a good actor.
And so. They actually thought it was part of this because they had been doing so many rewrites at this point in time.
Okay.
They actually thought it was part of the film.
When he keeled over with his heart attack.
So all the extras continued the scene.
While he's having a heart attack.
Poor
Buck.
And while the ambulance pulls up, And it wasn't until they carted him off that they realized that this wasn't part of the film.
Oh, what a bunch part of morons.
Film. Yeah, like they had the budget for an ambulance.
How much is this going to cost me?
I mean, normally it's at least $1,000 just to ride in it.
Yeah, right? So the scene cuts to a figure of the Tyrannosaurus Rex in a dark warehouse as two people, Dr. Wackenstein and his assistants, the unexplainably scantily clad Helga, walk through the doors. I'm not going to complain. I'm fine with it. The lights come on and the Tyrannosaurus figure begins to move, being controlled by somebody else in the room. The doctor puts the T-Rex through a series of tests and is impressed by the robotic dinosaur's ferocity and strength after it can lift a mere 135 pounds effortlessly. So he throws him like, you know, a barbell and all it has is just like 245 pound weights on it. I'm just like, okay.
Have you seen a T-Rex lift a barbell before?
No.
There you go.
And at the same time, Dr. Girlfriend got incredibly wet.
Yeah. I mean.
He revealed his plan, by the way, to implant a living human brain into the robot to give it consciousness, mobility, and immortality! Let's play a clip.
That is excellent. And now, my pet, all you need is mobility. I mean, life beyond this boring room and the limitations of a stupid computer. I, my love, will give you that freedom. I will give you everything. I will give you a brain. I will give you immortality. What a crock of shit!
So as you can see, this doctor's pretty over the top.
I think he's just committed to his work.
Might have something to do with it. Might have something to do with it. Director Stuart Raffel actually originally wrote this doctor to be much more serious and sinister. But Terry Kaiser's performance was so over the top and exaggerated, it caused Stu to drastically rewrite the character, going so far as to rewrite entire scenes so Kaiser could exaggerate the humor and the character to let it become more of the vision that Terry had for him. Later that night, Michael gets a phone call from Tammy apologizing over the fact that she ran off when the fight at the high school broke out. She claims that she needs to see him, so like any typical high school boy, he thinks with his dick and sneaks out to see Tammy.
Hey. If Denise Richards called me now and was like, I need to see you, I'd sneak out and go see her.
Sam.
I'm a grown-ass man. I don't look like one. I still look like shameless. A child.
That's shameless,
you
Sam.
You think you look like a child?
I mean, with a beard.
A gray beard.
I'm the size of a child.
We get some awkwardly heavy petting and making out by the two kids as they're interrupted by their clumsiness, phone calls from the parents downstairs, and finally by the big bad ex-boyfriend, Billy. A group of Billy's chums see Michael as he climbs the trellis on the side of Tammy's house to sneak into her window and give Billy the heads up.
Yeah, they totally narc on her.
Yeah, dude, what a fucking bunch of bitches.
The girls call Billy, right?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. In response, Billy and his gang of roving misfits barge into Tammy's house and smash up the place.
And her parents are just like, oh, hey, Billy, I know you abused my daughter.
Her dad's like legitimately scared of him.
Yes.
I mean,
this movie's ridiculous. I can't do anything. It's Billy.
Well, it's Billy. I would have knocked the shit out of that guy.
This is why we need guns.
I don't need guns. I have two guns, and they're attached to my arms.
Fiona and well, God damn it! I don't. What the hell's the Trek?
I'm sorry. Is that the names of your guns?
Yes.
Aww, that's adorable.
Oh, they aren't there.
These are my kids, Walker and Texas Ranger.
I'm gonna come at you like a spider monkey.
A chase ensues with Paul Walker as he attempts to escape Tammy's house on foot while being chased by a Lincoln Kennedy. Of course, he fails, or else there would be no more movie. So they shot this whole thing in one night. Paul and George did the scenes at the house until 2 a.m., and the car scene was filmed immediately after when they're all already exhausted. So they broke for craft services at about 2
and literally ate and then immediately started shooting the rest of the scene at 3 a.m.
Oh.
So they had already worked
all day.
And so now they're working deep into the night. When Billy chases Michael through the streets in the Kennedy Lincoln, Paul was already really running. So he's they had to redo the shot twice. He had to run a quarter mile at full speed each time at 4 a.m., already exhausted. And according to George, he said that this car was actually going like 20 miles an hour. So Paul Walker is really hauling ass to stay away from his car for about a quarter mile. The scene was initially supposed to be George drives up behind. Okay. So Billy drives up behind with the baseball bat, cracks him in the back, and Paul spills down onto the ground, and that's supposed to be the end of the scene. They're supposed to grab him in the street and then take him over to the wild animal park. Uh-huh. Obviously, that's not the way that worked out. But they shot it like that once, and Paul, they didn't have the stuntman available because it was too late. So Paul Walker did his own stunt.
Oh.
And so they smashed him in the back with this inflatable bat. He goes down after running full speed, almost gets hit by the Kennedy Lincoln, and just gets up. Like, he's just fine.
My man.
Yeah.
Just, like I said, the only thing that could stop him is a tree.
And so the reason they shot the scene twice, both of him doing, they didn't even end up using it, but they shot the scene twice, both of him spilling on the ground. The reason they couldn't use the scene wasn't because they had, like, an issue with the way that it was done.
Right.
It was because the inflatable bat that he was using was too noticeably inflatable.
I was like...
And you can actually see, like, just how inflatable it is at certain points in the movie, because you can actually see it bending backwards when he's, like, cocking his hands back and stuff occasionally.
So it was just they just used an inflatable bat?
Yeah, it was just an inflatable... Not like... it was, like, rubber, so it was a little bit heavier than just your standard, like inflatable toy. Yeah.
Surprised I didn't use one of those, like, plastic wiffle ball bats and just, like, paint it to look...
Well, they were initially supposed to use something... they were supposed to get some... Somebody was supposed to get something from the sporting goods store.
Okay.
And, just, and like nobody that. Did, and it was 4 a.m., so they went with what they had.
Which was a
rubber inflatable bat. So Billy and his gang, Michael... Or if they throw Michael into the animal park where lions and jaguars are running loose just randomly in the middle of Thousand Oaks, California.
It kind of sounds like the Richmond Metro Zoo.
Yeah, just a tad. Just a tad. It's just in somebody's backyard.
Yep.
You go to the Richmond Metro Zoo and it's just in somebody's backyard. He's like, yeah, just...
It is somebody's...
Stay away from that corner.
It is in somebody's backyard.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a privately owned zoo by some crazy dude.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that. That's crazy. I love this zoo so goddamn much. It's just so Richmond. I don't know how else to explain it other than that.
So after he drops beating Michael him, off at the Richmond Metro Zoo.
Yeah, so they do this after beating him senseless with this inflatable baseball bat. A lion mauls Michael, and he's left in a comatose state. He's brought to a hospital where his intoxicated uncle watches over him.
Oh, my gosh.
So he's left in this situation where his uncle is his only surviving family member.
It's so sad.
There's nobody else to care for him. Denise Richards is there. And she obviously cares about him,
yeah.
But, like, you know, they just started dating. What's she going to do? Like, it's not like she's got power of attorney or anything, you know, like that. So when the next scene happens, it's such a perfect exploitation of what's going on in this situation, right? Like, the doctor needs a body.
Yep.
There's this guy with no strings attached.
Yep.
He's the perfect victim.
He's a perfect person to harvest organs from.
Exactly, exactly.
That's why you have to have people around you that love you, so they don't take your brain.
Exactly. That's why when I die, somebody will, or when I'm about to die, somebody will definitely take my brain, because nobody loves me.
You're right.
Dr. Walkenstein.
Take this guy's brain, he sucks.
Dr. Walkenstein and his assistant, Helga, sees the opportunity to take advantage of the situation, and in one of the film's more ridiculous scenes, the two rip the EKG, or rig the EKG to make it look like Michael is dead, so they can use his brain to control the robotic Tyrannosaurus. Yeah, nobody bothers to check, nobody bothers to question. Let's play the clip.
Jim? Helga, did you hear that? This is his only living relative.
Oh, sad.
You know, I'm going to try everything I can to help bring your friend back, and possibly you could help me with that.
Okay, how?
Well, in cases of severe comas, we not only treat the body, we also treat the psyche of the patient, you see. So you must tell me everything you know about them. For example, was he a well-adjusted person?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Any fits of anger or depression?
No. Doctor, we have a big problem here.
Yes, let me see. Stop. Yes, his heart has stopped. Resuscitate, Elder.
No, Michael, no!
Oh, Mommy, if he wakes up now, he's going to have a heart attack for sure.
Live! Well, that's it. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I did all I could.
No!
That's it? He's dead?
It's an unfathomable twist of fate when God takes someone so young and innocent.
So there you have it. Michael's dead. This is the turning point of the film. takes a more graphic left turn from this point on. Aside from some coarse language, you could easily pass this with a PG-13 rating with no serious issues. But we're treated to one of the film's first gooey scenes, the brain transplant. After his brain is implanted, we're introduced to the new dinosaur Michael via a cameo scene from Napoleon Dynamite's Efren Ramirez, who plays an unsuspecting pizza guy. Michael escapes from the lab after dispatching some of Dr. Wackenstein's staff by eating their heads and literally crushing them flat with his big T-Rex feet. He then heads to town to wreak vengeance on his high school tormentors and get reunited with his sweetheart, Tammy. One of the more infamous scenes, there's a party that takes place shortly after. Mm.
That Denise Richards is at.
Yeah.
Why do you go to a party after your loved
because
one has
grieving.
Just died?
She needs to drink.
She just sits there crying, though.
I know. Don't you? Isn't that what you do at parties? Just sit there and cry after a loved one dies?
Absolutely.
I don't need a dead person to make me cry at parties.
Sam just cries anyway. No one invites you to parties.
Nobody invites you to parties. Crying on the stairs.
That's true. Nobody invites me to parties anyway. That's actually why I'm crying. I throw myself a party. Yeah. Party of one. I just sit on my couch with a bottle of vodka and I cry.
Okay.
There's a party that takes place with a bunch of Billy's gang. They're basically all off, including Billy's new girlfriend or fuck buddy or whatever you want to call her. Sean Whalen's character Weasel and Billy himself. A lot of that cast have fond memories of the shooting, describing some of the madness behind it.
Were they drinking and sexing?
No, but apparently the the assistant director had an issue with the fire marshal when they filmed this party scene. There were too many people.
At the party.
It was a real rager.
Sounds like apparently. A good Orange County party.
Yeah, I guess so. And so they had to pay the fire marshal off.
Yeah.
They slipped him $200 in the fire marshal.
I was going to say how much. I'm
so fire marshal said you have another hour.
All
right. So they had to...
Denise, stop crying. We only got 2 hours.
Yeah, right. So they had to basically rush the rest of the shoot in order to get it done because they had to get it all done that night.
Knowing that they only had an hour to do that, I'm wondering why there were some scenes in there that seemed completely unnecessary.
Well, they had been there for a couple hours.
Oh, okay.
It was like, you know, they arrived, the scene was going on, they were shooting,
and then the fire marshal came. Okay, that makes
and told
sense.
Them they had to disperse, and then was apparently corrupted.
Because that whole scene with like that one woman at the bar, and then the other guy, like, what the fuck is that?
Doesn't make it.
It makes no sense.
We'll actually talk about why some of this movie doesn't make any sense here in
Perfect.
A little bit. Let's talk a little bit about Sean Whalen's character's death. So if you'll remember, he gets disemboweled by the front claws of the T-Rex. Sean Whalen was literally told to put on a black T-shirt under his regular shirt and handed a big pile of guts. He said he remembers being handed the guts and thinking to himself, there's no way that these guts would have fit inside me. I'm not that massive of a human being. And then he was told that there was going to be no hole. He said, there's no hole for this to fall out of. There's no place. How are we going to rig this? Like, where he was expecting squibs. He was expecting, like... I guess, more Hollywood effects than what he had been spoiled.
He didn't want to have to
by his previous films, I guess.
By budgets.
Yeah.
So this guy was in the Matrix.
Yeah. And so it's just like one of those. He was handed the guts. He was like, what am I supposed to do with these? They literally just said, hold it, and then just drop it. They didn't give him any direction other than
just
that.
Just drop it?
Yeah. They were just like, just drop it. And so he's like, all right. So he took the scream that you hear in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that he took initiative to do that scream he's himself. Like, I'm gonna do this. He said he knows it looked fake as hell, but he loved doing it. He said it was awesome, and he compared it to the memories that he had of a kid going to see old horror movies with friends and remembering how cheesy some of those
were. He was one of my favorite parts of this entire movie.
Yeah, absolutely. So after the carnage ensued over at the party scene, Tammy realizes that the dinosaur is Michael and begins to search to find a more suitable body for him. Meanwhile, Dr. Wackenstein is in hot pursuit of his monstrous creation, which leads to a chase that ends with Michael killing the doctor himself. Police officers then open fire and destroy the mechanical dinosaur. Tammy manages to recover Michael's brain, and in the end, she takes it home with her and hooks his brain up to a computer, speakers, and video camera, which is just, I can't even talk about this scene with this.
It's so bizarre.
Who knew that she was an electrical engineer, a doctor, and a scientist at the ripe old age of 17?
Right. And a physicist and a biologist.
Right. Until they find a new body for him. Through the setup, Michael is able to speak and see, which allows him to view Tammy performing a striptease.
And her parents know about this. And they're okay with it.
She's 18. She can do what she wants.
Oh, God. It's so bizarre. It's just, looks like Madonna.
Yeah, kind of.
The outfit is Madonna-esque.
Yeah, very, very Madonna-esque. This causes the brain hookup to start sparking, and this is the end of the movie.
He's like, I like that, Tammy.
I do. So apparently that wasn't actually supposed to be the end of the film. We're going to talk about a little bit about the editing. What
the master editing of this movie.
Yeah, what went wrong with this? Because there were apparently when it was edited without the director's permission, without anybody knowing about this edit happening at all. Not once. But twice.
Yeah.
By two completely different people.
Okay.
So there was the initial round of edits happened because the distributor said that the gore was too taboo for things in the for this to be released in the
80s. Okay.
So a lot of the initial round of edits had to do with obviously cutting out the gore, reducing it down to a PG-13 runtime. So just doing that alone, the movie already starts to make less sense.
Mm-hmm.
But when they did that, they rearranged certain parts of the film. So a lot of the extra scenes that were filmed that made more sense in chronological order were just inserted randomly into other parts of the film.
Like the bar scene?
I'm pretty sure that was probably part of the party, but I don't know if that took place at that point in time and if there was more context to that scene.
Right.
Unfortunately, when the first and second round of editing happened due to the nature of the edits, all that footage is permanently lost.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so according to Raffel himself, he said that when he showed the cut to a financier, or to his financier, which was the cut that more or less is what we saw, the guy said, no, I wanted a Disney movie, and he recut it into a piece of nonsense.
Yeah, even though the financier was fully aware of the rewrites, apparently, at least according to Raffel.
Yeah. Now, somehow, though, it got released as a PG-13 cut on VHS on Christmas in 94 as a family-friendly comedy.
Uh-huh.
They took all the gore out, but for some reason left all the sexual innuendo.
It was
the 90s. Yeah, you could get away with that.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
At that point. Remember, like, they had boobs in PG,
that's true.
In James Bond movies that were rated PG at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, people didn't care.
The gore.
And so the second round of edits happened when the old gentleman that financed the film and owned the T-Rex. He was Dutch by
Why
way of South America.
T-Rex? Does anybody know?
Nobody. I cannot find a single explanation
for
this.
How he came across it?
Yeah. Why does he own this T-Rex? Does he Did he license it out to all other I movies, could find, or did all he I, just have it to fuck it, or what?
All I could find in interviews and from my readings were just that he owned it and offered it to Raffle.
He had it and offered
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I haven't. I was unable to find anything about
it. He fucked it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Raffle did a couple of interviews, one in 2018 with the Bristol Bad Film Club and one in 2019 with The Independent, where they talk about this a lot.
About where the T-Rex came from? Or about this movie?
Both. And more or less, everything I've come across has said pretty much the same thing, that a German or Dutch film distributor who's based in South America came to him
and said, I have this T-Rex?
With an offer of, I have $1 million to shoot a movie in 3 weeks' time that involves a dinosaur that I happen to have in my possession.
Do whatever you want with it.
Raffle said, oh, great, is it trained?
I love this guy.
And said, okay, what's the story? And the guy said, I wouldn't be calling you if I had a fucking story. So that's why they threw the script together in a week. And all he knew by the time was that the eyes worked, the arms moved, the head moved, and he had 2 weeks to use it before it was being shipped to Texas.
For something else.
Yeah. And after that, it's completely disappeared.
Yeah.
Nobody has any idea where this fucking thing wound up.
It
died in Texas.
It just,
apparently.
Well, I mean,
it was fucked to death in Texas. Where all things are fucked to death.
So he finished up that part and said, when you have to make a film like that, they're group endeavors. And in this case, we have a dinosaur head for 2 weeks. So what are we going to do? We're just going to smoke a lot of pot and try to figure it out.
That sounds about right.
Yes, it does.
It really does.
And what they came up with this.
Yeah, yeah. So this Dutch guy. I also couldn't find a name of this guy.
No.
It's just Dutch people running around with money, apparently. It's just so he when he received the film before it was pressed, before it went to distribution, he re-edited certain aspects of the film again.
The Dutch guy did?
Yeah, because he didn't think the film made sense.
Why does he get a chance to edit the movie?
It's his money.
I guess.
It's his T-Rex.
I guess. And he had no editing credentials whatsoever.
No.
So he
just owns a dinosaur.
So
that he fucks.
The film that he edited still exists, but it's been severely damaged because it wasn't stored properly or anything.
Yeah.
So there's no, once again, that you can't salvage that either. So he cut, let's see, he had issues, like I said, with the original cut of the film, so he edited it himself. He cut at least 20 minutes out of the movie. He was about 70 years old when he did it, and the director, Stewart, specifically says that he remembers he couldn't see very well.
I feel like as a director, you either have to have like an amazing sense of humor to know like what a shit show this movie is, or I would just be absolutely infuriated.
Oh, he was very upset.
Every single person is poking their fucking fingers in your movie.
He was upset about the gore getting cut out of it in the first place, but he was more upset about this because he cut the ending out.
Oh, I hate him so much.
So this guy cut the last 15 minutes of the film out because it wasn't supposed to end with her just dancing.
What was it supposed to end with?
He didn't say. He said it was. He said it was like, he did mention that there was going to be a beautiful shot of the sun going down. In Thousand Oaks was supposed to be the very last scene, but he didn't really describe the other 10 minutes or so of the film.
Okay. So she's still just having sex with the brain.
Probably.
Cyber
God, I hope
sex.
So.
Cyber just sparks.
God, I hope so.
Just sparks flying everywhere.
God, I hope so. And then this is also when the title screens were inserted. Mm. So the new title screens were inserted. Keep in mind, this guy couldn't see.
Oh, is that why
that's tanny? The whole reason that it's tanny.
Tanny and the T-Rex.
So when you boot up the movie, when you start the movie for the first time, you know, the credits start rolling. It says Tanny and the T-Rex with two N's, not two M's.
And then it introduces Denise Richards as
Tanny. Yes. And the whole reason for that is because this guy couldn't see the fucking credits.
This is one of the reasons why I watched the movie again in the beginning part.
Right.
We had to double check that it said Tanny.
Right. This was literally, apparently these edits took place literally a couple of days before they ran 1,000 prints of the film for distribution.
Oh my God. As a designer, like that is my nightmare. Yeah. Like I have anxiety just thinking about this.
These edits weren't communicated to anybody else, not even the other financiers.
Oh no.
Until after the prints were made and it had been distributed. Do you understand how lucky we are to even have the gore cut of this film still?
So the history behind the gore cut's actually pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So Joe Rubin, who's one of the co-founders of Vinegar Syndrome, heard rumors about the gore cut existing.
Right.
So he's heard, like,
it's all like an urban stories, legend at this point.
All the stories of the bullshit that they went through to make this movie. And so he decided to try to track it down. And he said, I actually very easily found the lost footage on YouTube because of the uncut film had once been broadcast on Italian TV, which was somehow someone videotaped and then cut together with the censored American video version and then re-uploaded it. And I watched it and enjoyed it and went searching for the rights. At which point he was led down the road of talking to Raffles' wife and frequent collaborator, Diane, and getting a number of possible leads, most of which were just dead ends. He was then eventually put in touch with the man who currently owned the rights of the film, and after a couple of months of haggling, was able to get it unearthed, with Raffles' original cut still existing in its entirety, so minimal technical restoration was needed.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
This gives considering me how much was left
on the cutting room floor, it's crazy that this exists. And it was pretty much because of Italy.
Yeah.
Thank God for Italy.
Yeah, right? That's the one place you don't send. You send and the one uncut
guy
version of
and one do. Guy who's really into obscure, weird movies.
Yeah.
We love you.
Dude, say what you will about the people that collect, that are like fiendish collectors out there. They might seem a little off. But then all of a sudden you need the gore cut of Tammy and the T-Rex and you thank God for this person's existence.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting movie. I've had a couple people reach out and say, hey, oh, we're pretty excited that you're covering this. Yeah. You talked about it for
all
so long.
All the time.
How does it compare?
How does it compare?
How do you remember it versus how it was when you actually watched it this time.
And how old were you? Take us back, Palmer. So you're...
It was 94. I don't think I saw it in 94. So I think I saw it like 96.
Okay, so you're 10, maybe?
Yeah, 9, 10, around there.
Set the stage. Are you eating Dunkaroos?
I want to say I found the VHS in a Goodwill.
Okay.
But I genuinely...
So someone else had already decided that it was not worth their time.
I genuinely can't remember how I got it. And honestly, that's not really the best part of the story. So I had seen... God, I don't remember what it was. Oh, no. You know, it must have been later than 96. Because I was starting to... It must have been, 98? When did Starship Troopers come out? 97. Okay, so 97. Because I had seen Starship Troopers, and I, like...
You were into the sci-fi?
I was into the Denise Richards.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And, however, I came across this, and Denise Richards is right on the cover of the VHS. And
in her weird pseudo-gothic red dress.
Yeah, and
with crosses hanging from the waist.
Madonna!
Horny before I knew what horny was, young brain clicked. It was like, you like this. So I picked it up and I watched. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen that movie as a kid. It was one of those things that, like, when I first picked it up and watched it, I was really scared because of the ending scene.
That your mom was going to walk
in and
see.
Yeah, that my mom was going to walk in and see me watching this movie.
So I watched the ending at work and I also felt very... I was like, I hope no one walks by right now when I'm watching this.
So I remember distinctly hiding it as a kid for a little while and then just like not caring as much. Because at that point, stuff like Ace Ventura had started coming out. And there was like that whole like blowjob scene in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like I watched that in front of my mom and she didn't give a shit. And
you thought she would like, she was like, chill. Yeah,
my mom's cool, man.
I got this.
And I don't know why I thought she was going to be so bothered by it. Because when I watched horror movies and stuff growing up, she always would just be like, just remember, you know, the violence in this movie isn't actually real. Like, if you have these, you know, if you want to talk about anything that we're seeing, blah, 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 blah. So I'm pretty sure she would have been like that. But I feel like sex is always so much more taboo than violence,
absolutely,
at least in the States.
In the United States, it is, for sure.
When you're watching it with family members around. But yeah, it's one of those obscure things. And honestly, like, I had totally forgotten that was a part of my childhood and a piece of my life up until we saw the Vinegar Syndrome trailer. Yep. And it just awakened this whole like section, you know, like you've got those things that you just like.
Did your lizard brain come back to life?
Yeah, yes, yes. It's just you. I'm sure all of you guys have it, right? Like there's like pieces of your childhood
that you don't remember until...
that you don't really remember, and then something sparks it, and all of a sudden you're just like, oh yeah, I remember that. Like that was like how could I have forgotten?
Yeah.
This Tammy and the T-Rex was that thing apparently for me, which I don't know if that means my life is sad.
No.
Or
amazing.
Is it amazing?
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Alex.
You're welcome.
I appreciate the confidence boost. I know you always say it, but then you tell me reluctantly that you love me later.
Well, so regarding the ending dance, the striptease at the end.
Yes.
That made me physically uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a little out there, but Stuart Raffel is incredibly candid about his views on Denise Richards.
Mm. Oh, okay. Yeah.
He said that all the actors in the film are great to work with. Denise played the scene where she's talking to the dinosaur for real as best as she could. She was never a great actress, but she was pretty.
Yep.
She was from the Midwest, and she was extremely puritanical when she came to Hollywood. And I said, well, at the end, I want you to take your clothes off and do a dance for him. And she said, oh, no, I can't do that. So I took her to Victoria's Secret or somewhere like that to get her an outfit. And then she was kind of corny as a dancer. She just wasn't someone who could get into being sexy just yet. She evolved into that later, going from being almost virginal and ending up marrying Charlie Sheen. And it's doing, funny what happens.
And doing a, what's that movie with he did with Neve Campbell, or she did with Neve Campbell?
I like to think that this movie had an effect on
they,
that.
Where they made out in the pool.
Oh, yeah.
Wild Things.
Yeah.
With Matt Damon. Never.
Matt.
What's that? Matt Something Dillon.
Or, yeah, that guy. That guy from that movie
from
that we
like. From
that
movie
liked.
That we like.
She, in an interview, Denise Richards said that Ellen Dubin had a lot to do with her finally agreeing to do that scene.
Who's Ellen Dubin?
She played Helga.
Oh, right.
Because she was provocatively dressed the entire
time. Yeah.
And so apparently
she rocked it.
What better way to learn than talking to Dr. Girlfriend?
Right. Absolutely. So they had a conversation because she was like, oh, I'm really nervous about this. I don't want to do this final scene, blah, blah, blah. To the point where she was probably going to leave the shoot.
Okay.
Because she was really uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she was like, how do you do it? How do you have that much confidence to be on the screen? And so Ellen was just like,
money.
We look good. Yeah. Apparently was pretty much the answer.
Oh, you know what? I am pretty hot.
And so apparently she paused and reflected on that. And then finally it was okay with doing the scene.
Oh, yeah, I am hot.
Oh, yeah. All right.
There you go.
Sometimes it takes something as simple as somebody saying we look good.
Like Denise Richards did not know she was hot.
Sometimes you need somebody else to tell you.
Okay.
Sometimes you just need that extra.
She was just a hoe for show.
Faux show.
Don't you shame her.
Oh, I'm not. I'm impressed.
I mean, her dancing gets a lot better from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie.
Yeah, you can see the confidence level rise, really.
She's living it.
Just all sorts of things rising.
Live, laugh,
scene.
Love. Dance.
Paul Walker's brain boner.
Yep. Just the sparks of just his brain semen. Just all over the place. All right.
Didn't he also get a boner sometime during the movie?
So when they're...
He was on the operating table,
as they're
right?
getting ready to transplant his brain, they're testing the different spots in his brain.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they do is poke on the brain part that apparently controls his wiener.
Mm-hmm. The boner part.
The boner part.
The boner part
and
of the brain.
If you go back and watch it and pay attention, you can actually see the person's hand that's in between the sheets that actually shoots up.
I would like to be that part.
Yeah, just the hand between Paul Walker's legs. Yeah. We all have dreams. We all have dreams. All right. We got any final points on this movie?
Can we just talk about the cloaca?
Oh yes. How dinosaurs have the sex.
Right,
oh,
so right. That's the one thing I would say about this movie, right, is that Denise Richards really easily accepts that, one, her boyfriend is a dinosaur, and two, that I'm pretty sure had he been a dinosaur for longer...
She would have banged him.
She would have banged him.
And apparently, right. we talked about this a little bit before we started recording tonight. Mm-hmm. Alex would be in the same camp if her husband was turned into a dinosaur.
So if your wife turned into a dinosaur, you would just, what, you would ignore her?
No, I'd hang out with
Sexually?
Her. I'd hang out with her, but I'm not going to fuck her.
Really? You're not curious?
Fucking a dinosaur.
Oh my god, this is just opening a whole bunch of other avenues.
I suddenly don't feel comfortable with the fact that you own pets.
I don't. Okay,
we've gone from Wincest to bestiality on one podcast.
Right, I don't want to.
But you would out of curiosity.
Okay, it's like those dildos that they have that are dragon's penises.
Oh, the one that leave eggs inside
that
of you?
That have eggs?
Yeah.
Which I do not own. I just want to preface this. Uh-huh. But I'm just saying, if your wife is like, Sam, kiss me.
Yeah, I'd give her a smooch.
Sam, touch my boobs.
Did dinosaurs
have boobs?
She doesn't
have any boobs.
Sam, impregnate me in my cloaca. touch my cloaca. So how
this has just opened up a whole bunch of new things.
So we did ask if dinosaurs have penises.
Yes, that was a big conversation point before we started recording. So I found this on the SmithsonianMag.com
site. So you know it's legit.
So it is legit. Apparently, starting in 1906, apparently, was when the conversation around do dinosaurs have dicks and how do they fuck came up. And so a paleontologist
might have been on the record. It might have been on the record in 1906. I guarantee you, some motherfucker who discovered dinosaur bones is probably like,
we can't decide if they had feathers or not, but we do want to know. Yeah, right.
Well, that seems to be universally accepted at this point that they do have feathers, and that gets mentioned
and
later.
And cloacas.
But apparently, in 1906, paleontologist Henry Fairfield Osborne proposed that male T-Rexes used their tiny arms for grasping during sex.
Get over here.
That was eventually kind of debunked, or fell out of favor, at least.
Fell out of favor. Jesus Christ.
According to this article, this is like quote, religion. Unquote, perhaps due to embarrassment as much as anything else. But the question remained, how do we study the sex lives?
What?
I don't know.
Apparently these paleontologists saying that T-Rexes are using their tiny little arms to hold on to things.
Okay. Because it's so absurd to think that they could grab on with their tiny little arms?
Yeah.
Okay.
So apparently, though, it's come out that dinosaurs shared a common ancestor with alligators and crocodiles more than 250 million years ago, and modern birds are the living descendants of dinosaurs akin to the Velociraptor. Therefore, apparently, we can surmise that anatomical structures present in both birds and crocodilians are present in dinosaurs as well. Usually, the reproductive groups of both are generally similar, with males and females having a single opening called the cloaca, which is a dual-use organ for sex and excretion. This next sentence is one of the most absurd things I've ever read in anything tied to, like, the Smithsonian or something I would consider legitimate. Male birds and crocodilians have a penis that emerges from the cloaca to deliver sperm, and dinosaur sex must have followed the quote-unquote insert tab A into slot B game plan carried on by their modern day descendants.
What does that mean?
Stick your dick into a hole.
Right, but it's okay, yeah. So that's how they did it. So if Paul Walker was a dinosaur, similar
to human sex.
Yes.
It could happen.
Yep, absolutely.
I guess.
Alex is going to go out there and bone some dinosaurs.
Everybody loves a dinosaur.
Open the door, get on the floor.
Everybody
fuck those dinosaurs.
In the cloaca. I learned a name for a new sexual organ today.
You'll forget it later.
See, you're right. You're not wrong about that
I'm going to specifically request the Vinegar Syndrome rename the cut of this movie to Tammy and the Cloaca.
Yeah, I would agree. I also want to throw out there that if Bad Dragon feels like sponsoring this podcast at any point in time, please send us some messages.
If you look up dinosaur penis on Google, there's a lot of pictures of dinosaurs fucking.
I don't.
That's all right.
There is just
it's a Rule 34 thing, though, right? Like, no,
kind of.
They're scientific photos.
Oh, those aren't as fun to look at, though.
They're not like porny photos.
I don't know. None of these are scientific.
I typed in dinosaurs fucking, and the first thing that came up was on YouTube.
Like, there's a Brachiosaurus mounting another Brachiosaurus.
The very first one is T-Rexes.
Could you imagine being around at that point in time and just being a tiny little human as two fucking massive lizards try to mount each other?
I don't want to get in the way of whatever's coming out after that. There were two.
Apparently you do, though, because you're saying.
No, I'm just saying, if Ben was a dinosaur, the man that I love, and that was not going to be our life for the rest of our lives, I'm not just going to be like, deuces. There's also penis-shaped Velociraptor dildos for sale.
Yeah. Does that surprise you?
No, not at all. That
we were literally just talking about Bad Dragon and now.
But this one looks like an actual dinosaur, though. It has a tail.
Oh.
Turning it.
I will have to link this also in the podcast description. Be sure to text that over here.
I will.
The things people will stick inside themselves.
I'm looking at the 18 billion different models that Bad Dragon Dildo has. On their website. Yeah. There are far too many. Okay, what are we rating this out of? Bad Dragon Dildos? Cloacas?
Cloaca. I don't know.
Waka Cloaca Flame?
Oh my god, yes. No, that's the title of the episode.
Paul Cloacas?
Yes. I will give this a 2.5 Paul Cloacas.
2.5 Paul Cloacas?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's a lot of cloaca. I feel like the more that I say cloaca, it sounds like Kahlua. I feel like it's like a drink. Okay, Sam, what about you?
I feel like I need to preface that you need to be drunk.
Yeah.
To watch this?
Yeah.
Yes, and no. then it's
the childhood me would disagree
and
completely.
And then it's 2.5 cloacas.
What does the sober you get?
I don't know, one.
Sober her fell asleep.
Yeah, sober me did fall asleep.
That's true, actually.
Drunk me loved it.
Yeah. I fucking loved it sober, and I'm looking forward to watching this absolutely hammered. I'm going to give it a, but that being said, it's not a good movie. It's not. 2.75.
A 2.75?
Wow.
Good lord, you guys
are still better than average.
How are you guys not giving this a 5 out of 5? I don't understand.
If you give this a 5, I'm literally kicking you off the podcast.
It is getting a 5 100% for me. This movie is genius.
He's not being serious.
I think he is.
I'm going to add it up and divide it and see what happens here.
I personally thought Mannequin was a better version.
Are you really giving this a 5?
You would. That puts us at a 3.41666666666666666 for the week. Alex can no longer fight me. Look.
The nostalgia
is a 5 with an asterisk next to it, okay? The asterisk stipulates that if you like bad movies, you will love this movie.
And I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Does that one glow in the dark, Alex?
Maybe. It's green enough.
Sorry, we're still looking at dinosaur comics. Alex is just spamming our chat with dinosaur dildos.
All right. Once again, you've learned some kink about us in another week. It's time for the housekeeping.
Oh, God, I think that's the cover image of this week's episode.
Let's make it happen. All right, now that we've digested this film, we've fought to this genius film for...
Oh, this one's actually kind of cute.
For what it is. Did you just call it cute?
Dude, come on. It's like a pudgy fucking child.
It is. It's like a little fat boy.
Okay, that's fucking horrifying. All right.
Oh, God. All right. Next week, we got a big one. It's huge. I'm really excited to jump into this one. It's got to do with bowling. It features hot women, but there's no missing toe or people named Jesus. It's a sorority babes from the slime ball Bowl-O-Rama.
Oh, my God. Bowling and hot babes.
Yeah,
and
buddy.
That can go wrong.
Prepare for another 5 out of 5. Let's see what happens when you couple a bunch of hot babes with a demon imp. Tune in next week and find out. You can follow us on social media like Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all at Terra Incognito. You can follow us individually, too. I'm Palmer at Sturmsworth. You'll see me... basically fighting tooth and nail to prove that Tammy and the T-Rex is the 5.
Palmer is prepared to defend himself on
I am. The masks. This is the hill that I've chosen to die upon. And it will remain that way.
You can find me at A Looters, vehemently trying to back on Twitter from a long hiatus now, just vehemently trying to discourage Palmer from ever telling anyone that this is a 5.
I would have said posting pictures of cloacas or something.
Oh, yeah, also, I'm Sam at Sam Heaps, and I'm going to be posting all of Alex's dinosaur dildo photos that she's spamming us with. Yeah. I will be letting the world know about Alex's kinks.
I'm just going to start tagging Bad Dragon in everything that we do until they give us a sponsorship.
I think that's a good partnership.
It'll just be Bad Dragon and what's her name from fucking the one you want to make lasagna with.
Oh, Kathy Bates?
Yeah, just going to tag both of them in everything we do from now on.
I stopped tagging Kathy Bates because I think that she thinks I'm creepy.
Has she given you any hint?
No, or doesn't notice me at all.
And yeah, that's those, probably.
Yeah, if she thought you were creepy, I think she would have blocked you.
I would have been so happy, but either way.
That is kind of creepy.
Either way, she doesn't know I exist or doesn't care about me, and both of them hurt my feelings equally.
Oh, God. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more Dragon Dildos.
Love you, Kathy.
As always, Alex.
I love you, Kathy. Do you want to keep it creepy?